This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
And, of course, you can bring up anything. That is the point here on Free Talk Live. Definitely appreciate Mark Hopkins coming on to join us to tell his story about how he was targeted for selling Bitcoin online. Sounded somewhat similar to our situation, Aria, you and I.
It was pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah.
I mean, at least from my perspective, it was exactly the same. Only I didn't have a wife they threatened to charge as well.
Yeah, that's true. Also, one other difference was they actually did criminally charge and imprison one of the victims of the scam artist in his case. Not the scammer, but the scammer's victim, which is extra sad for her sake.
I mean, everything they did here is so immoral and so
monstrous.
Evil that I cannot imagine how anyone stands by the U.S. government. Like, they got
either.
This guy, even what he was doing was completely illegal and had all sorts of victims, even if we allow that, and that wasn't what was happening, but even if we allow that, right, they were going to prosecute his wife as well. And remember,
just
they have kids
the
together. Yeah, because they shared, husband and wives do,
yep.
They happen to have a shared bank account, and for that, they were going to charge her, take the kids away, and throw them both in prison. And not only that, but they went after one of the actual scam victims here,
yep.
And prosecuted her as well.
Outrageous.
It's absolutely insane. It's monstrous.
So there's a lot of things that they're doing that are horrible. We did touch on that they're targeting the cryptocurrency industry in various different ways. And actually, I was just commenting on this today as I was talking with some people off the air about, I'm actually surprised we haven't seen major SEC targetings in the last couple of weeks. I mean, they went after Coinbase a few weeks ago. They've gone after Bittrex. These are some of the more noteworthy cryptocurrency exchanges here in the United States. It seemed like for a little while there, it seemed like every week there was some major new lawsuit that the SEC was bringing. And
well, Congress just wagged their finger at them. So they're keeping a low profile for a few months, I would speculate.
Well, either that or they're just preparing the next lawsuit.
True.
So, we'll continue bringing you updates. Meanwhile, in the financial world, there's been another bank collapse in the last week, and that is First Republic Bank. And I think we mentioned briefly last night, somebody called in about it, that this is now the second largest bank failure in the United States' history. The first one being the 2008, I'm forgetting which bank it was.
Was it AIG?
No. It was like some Western bank. But anyway, whatever the one was in 2008, they were the biggest one still to this day. But First Republic's now number two. It was Silicon Valley Bank, which failed a month and a half ago. That was the number two largest bank. But that has now been eclipsed by First Republic Bank.
I don't remember the First Republic Bank thing. Is that more recent one, like within the last few weeks?
Yeah, that's
so they crashed in this last week.
First Republic Bank, it was last week that they started to crash even harder when they announced that these big companies, the publicly traded companies, they have to make quarterly reports.
Yeah.
Right. So in their quarterly report, they announced that in this first quarter of the year, they had lost $100 billion. In customer deposits. Not lost as in, like, where'd the money go, but lost as in customers pulling $100 billion out of the bank.
Okay.
And
that's a little bit better.
And it was actually 40% of their entire deposits had exited the bank in the first quarter of this year. So that's not good news. That doesn't show that the customers trust the bank, right? Like, that's a mass run for the exits from First Republic Bank. And so their stock started to plunge.
So what was the other one that was in, like, New York or something?
That was Signature Bank.
Oh, okay.
That was the one the feds went after, allegedly because they did deals with cryptocurrency companies. But First Republic started going down. I mean, its stock tumbled back when the Silicon Valley Bank thing was happening. It was one of the ones people were watching, like, yeah. Ooh, this is going to be, this one's next, was what, you know, people were saying. And in order to prevent First Republic from going immediately next, the top 11 banks in the United States ponied up $2 or $3 billion apiece, total of $30 billion. And they gave $30 billion as a subsidy, it sounded like. I don't know if it was a loan or how they structured it.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, so they just said, oh, yeah, we the top banks in the country, we the J.P. Morgans, the Banks of America, we trust our regional banks, we support our regional banks, yeah, and we're going to give you $30 billion.
People out there, you got to ask yourselves why they did this. Because you can't for a moment, you listener out there, you cannot but possibly believe that J.P. Morgan Chase actually gives a damn about this regional bank.
They don't.
They're a money-making machine. They exist to make money, and that's all that they do. So what is it? What value do they derive from giving $2 or $3 billion to this regional bank? And it's solely to prop up the system.
It's to stop a bank panic.
Yes.
That's what it was.
Because that bank panic is going to destroy J.P. Morgan just as much as it does everyone else. And well, it may take longer.
J.P. Morgan may be too big to fail.
What does that mean? That the government
that
will...
That means the government will bail them out.
At a certain point, that's not possible, though.
That is true.
And we may be... And my gut tells me that we may be at that point now, or we're approaching that.
And they
that
may
point.
Realize that. And yeah. they may realize that. I was actually reading an article today that was just a little too in depth for, I think, on the air, but it went over how many banks are actually in this sort of underwater state where their assets are less than essentially their liabilities. So they're.
Well, this was inevitable. Yeah. The whole point of fractional reserve banking was to make it so that their assets are outstripped by their liabilities, or the other way around, or whatever. I'm mixing
That's
up
true,
terms.
But it's worse because of what the Federal Reserve has done with raising the interest rates and basically screwing the banks, essentially, is what happened.
That's what they want. I mean, it's a massive. What is the word when they buy out all the places that go out of business? Centralization of wealth? That's not the word I'm looking for. But we've seen this in multiple industries where they collapse an industry and they go in and they buy everything for pennies on the dollar.
Yes. Guess who bought up First Republic Bank?
It had to have been one of these mega banks, right?
Chase.
Of course.
Chase
Why
did.
Not? Right?
Chase did.
It was either them or Wells Fargo or Bank of America because there are limits, if I remember correctly, on how many branches each one of these banks can have in the United States.
And really?
This is why Wells Fargo doesn't have very many branches over here on the East Coast.
Because they're already at the limit?
Yeah, and it's like 250 branches or something. I don't remember the exact number, but there is some sort of limit.
Well, I'm sure Congress will raise that limit.
Well, to get around it, that's generally what they do. You have J.P. Morgan buying, like, First Regional Bank of New York or whatever. That's really just a subsidiary of J.P. Morgan and Chase, but they don't call it that, and that's how they get around it.
Oh,
but
they keep the original name?
Sometimes.
Okay.
I suspect
okay.
they will in this case, but I
don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, it's not a good brand. Like, you don't want to keep the names of these
That's
failed
true.
Banks.
That's
right?
a really good point
You
as
want
well.
People to forget First Republic Bank.
But this was always inevitable. And, you know, it was true in 2007 or 2008 that we had banks that they said were, you know, too big to fail. And we're going to see this again. We're like, no, we can't allow J.P. Morgan to go under or whatever. So here's a massive amount of money. And that can work. But when they do that, it causes inflation, massive amounts of inflation, not to mention the public unrest. I remember how upset people were in 2007 and 2008 about these banks that were being bailed out while people were losing their homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to go any better today. In fact, the economic struggle that people are facing on average is significantly worse today than it was 15 years ago.
Yeah, we didn't have the inflation aspect in 2008.
No, so this is going to be an absolute disaster, and the only way that the government can fix this... I say fix this. Fix is not the right word. The only way they can kick this can down the road is by printing out obscene, heretofore unimagined amounts of money and giving them to these mega banks.
Yep. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. I'm going to get to Peter St. Ange here. He's a Mises fellow, I believe. He's an economist, and he's been following this bank situation and the de-dollarization fairly closely. Here's his summary of what has happened with First Republic Bank.
The second largest bank failure in American history just wrapped up. The third and fourth were a mere month ago, with First Republic being sold to the largest bank in America, J.P. Morgan. Morgan said it will take on all of First Republic's deposits, $92 billion, and most of its assets amounting to $203 billion. Morgan is actually paying, which is a nice change. We, the taxpayers, don't have to pay them to take it on.
Yet.
They're paying $10.6 billion, but it actually books a profit immediately, $2.5 billion, in fact, since the FDIC is sweetening the deal, meaning you are sweetening the deal, with $13 billion in shared losses on the loans, plus $50 billion in fresh financing. So the FDIC's threadbare coverage, already scrounging to just 0.6% of all deposits, gets even thinner.
Now, what he's referring to there is the FDIC has a fund to pay out of, right? Like when you go into the bank and you see the sign on the, you know, near the teller that says FDIC insured up to $250,000.
Yeah.
That comes from the Federal Deposit Insurance Fund.
Right, and they guarantee each account up to $250,000, except when the first one, Signature, I think it was, went under.
Yep.
They said, we're not going to just do the first $250,000, we're going to guarantee all of it.
That's right. That's
and,
right.
Of course, this fund that you mentioned about gets depleted even faster
mm-hmm.
when they do that. And if I understand correctly, what he said was that the fund is already woefully inadequate. It's sort of like 0.6%
of all deposits.
So yeah. It already doesn't even come to 1% of
right.
covering all the deposits.
That's right. That's one of the reasons why they need to kick these things down the can down the way for some time, right? Because if five banks fail all in 1 week,
how do you screw up? Insurance is like the easiest industry to manage. All you do is you calculate risk and you say, okay, well,
this isn't a real business.
Insurance is a business. Right, but this is supposed to be Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or whatever.
It's just insurance with quotes around it.
I know. But if you task me with the need to insure bank deposits,
yeah.
you know, that's a practical, feasable thing
that someone could do. If you
were
running an insurance business, you probably wouldn't insure a bank that actually lends out money it didn't have. Right? Like, that would be a pretty high rate of insurance if you were willing to write them
in today's world, I would probably do it just because it's so common. But if you were the first to come at me and be like, hey, look, I want you to insure me, and I want to loan out 10 times more than the amount of money that I have.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, get out of my office. What's wrong with you? Well, can I have some of the crack you're smoking?
Right, because ultimately the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, quote unquote, is a federal government agency. And so if the worst occurs, and I think St. Ange might address this in this video, but if the worst happens for them, and that is that their insurance fund is depleted entirely, well, they can just go back to Congress or whoever and say, look, we need $1 trillion or whatever, right? Like they will have somebody cover this.
The way this is funded, right, is that these banks that are members of it pay some amount of money to the FDIC.
Yeah.
So it should function just like any kind of insurance where you pay this amount of money and everything's fine so you don't have to cash out and then something goes wrong and that's what the insurance is there to cover.
In normal times it would, right? Because in normal times, you know, bank fails over here, bank fails over there, they're relatively small, it's not a big deal, doesn't even make it to national radar. But this is not normal times, and there may be some more dominoes falling here. In fact, we're going to talk about who might be next. Coming up. Let's continue here with St. Ange.
Note, the FDIC already lost, meaning you already lost, $22.5 billion on Silicon Valley Bank, most of which $19 billion, will be converted into what the FDIC calls a special assessment, which is a tax on your bank account. They're going to take that nice and slow over the next 4 years, presumably so you don't notice. After all, you don't shear the sheep all at once. Now, Morgan taking on all deposits does avoid the uncomfortable conversation whether, indeed, all rich depositors in America have been pre-bailed out by Janet Yellen, which would trigger the mother of all special assessments. And so when the smoke clears, yet another fast-living bank found a new home, and it only cost you $63 billion paid to the largest bank in America. As predicted, the $30 billion injected by major banks a few weeks ago was all covered. Now attention turns to the other.
Oh, that's interesting. So the $30 billion that the banks injected into First Republic to kick the can down the road. We didn't know how long it was going to be, a week, 2 weeks. Turns out it was a month. But the $30 billion, they're getting back. So the federal government or the FDIC and the guarantees or whatever that they're giving into this buyout, whoever it was, those 11 banks, they're covered.
I'm glad you explained that because I sort of tuned him out there because I got to thinking about, you know, this from the average person's perspective. And
they're probably not paying attention.
No, I think they are, but I'm amazed, I think, that they're not burning down the White House and all the banks and every other institution out there. Because we're talking about people who are, like, taking out loans to buy groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, the government is worried how they're going to protect the deposits of people who have more than $250,000 in the bank. These people don't have $2.50 mm-hmm. in the bank. They're negative $250, and they spent that on groceries. And that's the average American out there. So the average American, they absolutely have tuned this out long ago because
sure.
it's
60% or paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, it's so far removed from their world. And I don't know how to explain to them this. I'm not sure this even matters to them, right? So take out the pitchforks and go burn down the White House. That's not a suggestion. It's hyperbole, obviously. But, like, I don't know what to tell the average person to do when they can't afford groceries and the government's like, oh, my goodness, this guy has $500,000 in his account. How are we going to insure all of it? And they're over there eating their ramen noodles and saying, look, I'm sorry, kids, there's no Christmas this year.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane. And then the guy we talked about from the United Kingdom yesterday saying, well, you're just going to have to accept it. You're a little bit poor. Now, to start tarring and feathering people.
Hmm. Well, I definitely understand the frustration and the anger. I don't think that the, and I'm not saying that's a, per se violent because you said there's a way to do it that's non.
Yeah, from what I understand about tarring and feathering, it's not actually violent. I mean, it's mean, right?
Well, they're not being nice.
Right, but I mean, it's not going to hurt anyone. It's just going to be embarrassing.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's what we need.
Give them a good pantsing in front of a crowd of people.
I mean, if you're one of these immoral monsters who is sitting around pondering how you're going to protect Jeff Bezos from inflation and the bank failures while the people in the grocery store are taking out payday loans to buy groceries,
yeah.
You should be ashamed to walk around in public. And the best way to encapsulate and display that shame is for you to be covered in tar and feathers so that people can look at you and go, hey, that's one of the idiots responsible for this. Point and laugh at him.
Let's continue here.
Other regional banks, some of which are in almost as dire shape. In particular, Western Alliance, $69 billion in deposits, and PacWest out of Arizona, $41 billion in deposits. In fact, hundreds of banks, according to a Stanford study, thousands, are in trouble because of the fastest rate hikes in 50 years. These crash their bonds, impair their loans, and vaporize the easy profits they were making paying depositors pennies.
This was inevitable. This was planned, right? The whole point of the easy money and then suddenly retracting it was to make these banks desperate.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I don't think the banks planned for it because otherwise they wouldn't have.
No, the Federal Reserve did. And the major banks like J.P. Morgan mm-hmm. and all of them, they did. And the smaller banks, they just fell for it because they thought it would just be fine. And they would never screw us over. But this was calculated, just like the original Depression was calculated.
Yeah, and you're right. The major banks are definitely in on it. They know they stand to benefit here because they're the ones that are absorbing, you know, $100 billion. That left First Republic Bank, some of it may have gone into money markets, but a lot of it probably went into the major banks because a lot of people have been leaving the regional banks, seeing them as unstable, and yeah. rightly so, but wrongfully, I think, believing that the big ones are too big to fail, and so they're pulling their deposits out of regional banks and moving them into Banks of America and Bank of, you know, J.P. Morgan and all that. And that's making the biggers bigger, and it's maybe they are not going to be too big to fail when it all comes down.
It's a classic game that they have played repeatedly. You give people lots and lots of money, and then they rely on it. They live the high life, and they love it, and it's great. And then suddenly you bring it down to zero. You stop giving them any money, and you start demanding that money back. And suddenly they don't have it anymore because they spent it on this, and they spent it on that. That's exactly what they've done here, and they did it on purpose, knowingly, planned it, and then did it. And we said it was going to happen. Because this is what they always do. They always use this as a mechanism for. It's the same way that Walmart comes into a community and buys up all the mom and pop stores.
They just put them out of business. They don't buy them up.
Okay. Well, And the internet, it's more common for them to buy it up. So I guess I just sort of confuse
they
it.
They just come in and they offer cheaper products, and then, you know, the mom and pops go out of business.
So that's different from Walmart. So Walmart's inapplicable. But we've seen other places.
Consolidation. What you are talking about is consolidation, right? That's where there are fewer options in a marketplace, and soon there are going to be fewer banking options in the marketplace. In fact, not just soon, but that actually has been the trend. You can look at charts showing 100 years ago, there were 30 to 40,000 banks in this country, and now there's 4,000 something. So, I mean, there's been a huge downward trend in the number of banking institutions.
But now there's cryptocurrency.
There are, but it's harder to get than it's ever been.
It is, and that's by design as well. I did a speech about this at the Porcupine Freedom Festival 2 years ago, shortly after the raid, where I was pointed out exactly then that what they're trying to do is control the on-ramps to cryptocurrency. And look, 2 years later, that's where are we? They've taken control of all the on-ramps to cryptocurrency.
The words of one analyst, this isn't about individual bank runs. It is a, quote, run on the business model. Unfortunately, essentially every bank in America used that business model, loading up on expensive bonds to park the influx of pandemic-era deposits, and then losing hundreds of billions as rates went up. American banks are now sitting on at least $620 billion of unrealized hidden losses. So First Republic was about 5% of that. And we've got 95% to go. So what's next? The Fed meets in 2 days. They're expected to hike rates again to 5%. The market then expects them to stay in chill for a while and then to actually start cutting rates in November at a steady pace, coming to just 3% in time for the 2024 election. Why flip-flop so fast from hikes to rate cuts? One theory is inflation falls rapidly. Another is the economy gets so bad that the Fed gives up against inflation and just panic cuts. And yet a third, predicted over a year ago by the incomparable Mark Faber, is that the Fed's main goal in life is buying political immunity, economy be damned, and boosting the economy going into the 2024 election buys an awful lot of friends in Washington. Either way, we'll be watching.
His name, Peter St. Ange. His Twitter profile is at Prof. St. Ange, P-R-O-F-S-T-O-N-G-E. Let's go to the phones here. We got David Hathaway. We can talk more about those two. You mentioned two banks in there. I want to talk a little bit about them. They might be next. But David Hathaway, the sheriff from, I believe it's Santa Cruz County down in Arizona. David, welcome.
Yeah, that's correct. Good evening, Ian and Aria. I was calling about a thing called the Uncanny Valley, and this relates to something that you two were talking about several days ago about robots getting more realistic and whether a person would own a robot. And if you look that up, it's spelled U-N-C-A-N-N-Y, Uncanny Valley.
Yes,
this
is a problem. It's a concept that if a robot becomes too realistic, it starts becoming off-putting.
Yeah, it becomes creepy, and the robotic researchers, as they make things more lifelike and more human-like, it gets to the point where people are repulsed by it, and they don't want to use the thing. Whereas if a robot just looks like, say, like a robot arm on an assembly line, it's not off-putting to people. You know, and things that like stuffed animals and things like that, they're not very, very human-looking.
David, hold that thought. I want to find out why you're bringing this up. Curious to know more. Stand by. We're going to bring you back here in a moment. We got David Hathaway on the line with us here, and phones are open for you if you want to join us as well. The number is 603-283-6160. We'll dig in a little further into this uncanny valley. Of course, AI stuff's always in the news. Maybe we'll talk about some of that coming up here tonight as well. Ian and Aria with you on Free Talk Live.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News update. U.S. troops are being sent to the southern border ahead of next week's expiration of the COVID-era immigration restriction, Title 42. Pentagon spokesman Pat Ryder.
These 1,500 military personnel who will be sourced from the active duty component will fill critical capability gaps, such as ground-based detection and monitoring, data entry, and warehouse support.
The U.S. is anticipating a massive influx of illegal immigrants when Title 42 expires. The FBI says there's a chance the man who shot and killed five of his neighbors north of Houston may have run to Mexico. Feds say they're working with law enforcement agencies across the country and across the border. Francisco Oropesa has been living in the country illegally and has a history of being deported and sneaking back across the border. House and Senate leaders will sit down with President Biden to discuss the debt limit next week. The U.S. could default as soon as June 1st if the debt ceiling's not raised. John Schaefer, USA News.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to C1, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Yeah. It's Free Talk Live. Ian and Aria here in the studio. Join us online anytime you want. Head over to freetalklive.com. Lots of features available for free there, so please enjoy those. Once again, that's freetalklive.com. And this hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Last year, Dash launched a killer app that allows you to spend your Dash at over 155,000 locations across the United States, including major retailers. And you get a discount for paying with Dash, which is finally a reason to spend crypto. Of course, that's what Dash has always been about. But one of the hardest things to do is convert somebody who's into cryptocurrency into an actual spender of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, because they just want to hodl, right?
Right, that's what all the marketing is, and most of the cryptocurrency industry is just buy it and hold it, hope it goes up in value, number go up. And
man, you use gold for that.
You can, I mean, there's all kinds of things you can hold on to, but the idea behind cryptocurrency, at least initially when Bitcoin came out, was that it was supposed to be peer-to-peer electronic cash, and Dash has held to that vision from day one of, as long as they've been around, which is almost a decade now at this point. But that's what is so cool about Dash Direct, is you get a discount for spending your Dash, and that's one reason why someone would want to actually use crypto. Because normally, you know, if you've got one thing that's worth something, you got another thing that's worth not as much. So meaning if you have something like gold and you have dollars, you're going to want to spend the dollars, right? Like, who's going to want to spend gold when it
Yeah, it's kind of flattering that no one wants to spend cryptocurrency, really. I mean, in those terms, because that's economically sound. If you have two different currencies you can use, and one of them is garbage, like the USD, and the other is constantly gaining in value, well...
Or could. It could gain in value. It doesn't always...
Historically, it has gained in value. Why would you want to spend, you know, the Bitcoin or the Dash or whatever...
Right.
When you could spend the USD.
So
but you can always rebuy the Dash.
True, but getting a discount for spending your Dash is the reason why, right? Because then you're actually getting a better deal. Now, each store on Dash Direct offers their own discount level. Some of them are as high as 8 to 9% off. So we're talking about this is worthwhile doing. Some of them are, you know, 4 to 5 to 6%, but still. Still worth it. You can go to learn more about it. You can download the Dash Direct app on your Android or Apple app stores. And don't forget that Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and widely available on exchanges and multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get Dash, and it's easy to use it. You can start by learning more at Dash.org. And big thanks to the Dash Decentralized Autonomous Organization for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. You can visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That is Dash.org. We have David Hathaway away with us here, calling in about the uncanny valley, which, as you guys described it, and I wouldn't have been able to recall this. I'm glad you guys are so familiar with it. The idea that once a robot becomes so human-like, it becomes like a turnoff, right?
Well, sort of. And the reason it's an uncanny valley is because it becomes more realistic, and that's okay. And then it hits a point where it's not okay, and it's creepy. But then it becomes more and more realistic, and it becomes okay again. But there's this valley there where it's like it's very, very realistic.
It's like the awkward
But there's
phase.
Something off about it, okay. And it's unsettling.
Why did you bring this up tonight, David?
You know, I thought it was intriguing, the conversation you guys had, and it sounds like Aria was already familiar with this, but I had coincidentally about that same time several days ago heard about this in another podcast, and it made sense to me. It was kind of intuitive that, yeah, I had sensed that kind of a thing with robotics that seemed too human, but it was just kind of an excuse to talk about something other than the border and immigration, which I'm always doing those kind of interviews like today and tomorrow. I'm doing those kind of thing on the whole Title 42 situation, but just something I thought was interesting, and it just kind of something different to bring up. I was just looking at on Wikipedia the graph, like Aria was describing, how as something becomes more human, more lifelike, it's more appealing to people until a certain point, and then it becomes creepy and repulsive, and it's something that, you know, robotic designers have had a hard time overcoming that. And I've kind of sensed that. And I think it also pertains to CGI and kind of animated imagery. As it gets more realistic, it's more creepy. But if they have these sort of weird, oversized eyeballs and stuff, then it's kind of cutesy. It stays in the realm of cutesy and tinky winky and Teletubby and that kind of a thing. But when it gets too human, but you can tell it's not human, then people lose interest.
Was there something that maybe sparked your interest in this? Is there like a new robotic development that caught your attention, or what made you think about this?
No, it was just hearing that discussion, and then I happened to, I think the other podcast was called Stuff You Should Know, and it happened to have this, a title of an episode called The Uncanny Valley. I never heard of that, and I listened to it, and it kind of in my mind, the two things just kind of jive together. Of, I think Aria was talking about as robots got more realistic, it would be, you know, would it cause a person to detach more from human company, or would it be something that could serve a purpose? And just kind of hearing those two podcasts in that same time frame, it was interesting to me, but it sounds like you guys have already heard of that.
Yeah, and it's also not just, you know, with human-like robots. It occurs in several places. Like one of my one of the video game series that I like a whole lot is called Five Nights at Freddy's, and it came about because this Christian guy was trying to make these games about these cute little stuffed animals or whatever, and it was supposed to appeal to Christians. No.
Oh.
No. That's what he made originally.
Okay.
And one of the people who reviewed it, Jim Sterling, was like, this is creepy. This is unsettling. There's something wrong with these things. What is wrong with you? You created these terrifying things. And he took that criticism to heart. And he said, okay, well, then I'm going to make an unsettling video game with these creepy animatronics. And it became Five Nights at Freddy's. And it was exactly that sort of thing where he was aiming for these cute, lovable little things, but there was just something ever so slightly off about them.
So he just turned them into horror icons.
That made the entire thing unsettling.
Kind of an older example of this. I'm older than you guys, but back in the 80s, they had I guess you would call animatronics, like a teddy bear that was called Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh, yeah.
You put batteries in, and it had a cassette tape. It also had a data track that would make parts like the eyeballs and the mouth move. But people aren't put off by a normal teddy bear, but people thought that was kind of creepy, like the Chucky movie or something like that, that all of a sudden this teddy bear, its eyeballs are following you, and its mouth is moving up and down and kind of making these weird motorized servo-type noises coming out of it, and then it got creepy, but when it was just less human, the motions, the actions were less human, it didn't have that effect. So that's kind of a primitive example of something on the continuum that's moving more towards human features, human characteristics that was off-putting for people.
That said, it was one of the most successful toys of the 1980s. I mean, Teddy Ruxpin was tremendously successful.
I suspect it's a similar reason that people find like porcelain dolls creepy. Like, I find them extremely creepy, but yeah, some people don't.
All right, so I know you said you're doing all these immigration interviews, David, but you are, you know, understandably, you are the sheriff of a border community there in Arizona, and I actually did have in my show prep tonight this story about Biden sending 1,500 military troops to the Mexican border.
Is this part of his whole "we're gonna declare war on Mexico" thing?
No. That's the Republicans are the ones who want to declare war on Mexico. At least so far, I don't know.
I lost track because they're all the same.
Democrats. Well,
the latest hype that's going on right now is that May 11th, this Title 42 nonsense is supposed to finally come to an end. And it's been on the verge of coming to an end for the last year and a half. I've written op-eds about how this should have been done away with a long time ago. It's only a COVID provision. It's just kind of like saying these dirty, nasty foreigners need to be prevented from doing any kind of claims for visas or asylum because they might be carrying COVID. So it's purely, Title 42 is purely a COVID provision. It's the last COVID provision that's still in place. And it's kind of odd. The ones that are more on, say, the conservative end of the political spectrum that have kind of always said that the COVID thing is a scam and any COVID mandate is a scam, they're hanging on to this last COVID mandate because it pertains to foreigners. You know, it's disingenuous.
Right.
Nobody's claiming that COVID is an issue, but it prevents all these people from being processed. So whether they show up at a quote-unquote legal port of entry or they show up between the ports of entry, like in the desert, they're immediately deported with no processing, whether they're claiming, asking for a work visa, student visa, tourist visa, or an asylum claim.
Wow, okay.
They're immediately deported without any processing under this Title 42. It started under Trump, and then it continued under Biden. So there's been various court cases and modifications that have made it sound like this was on the way out, and then some other federal judge would chime in and give them 30 more days or 90 more days. But now there's this hype that's been going on for a year and a half that the world's going to come unglued. It's going to be like Y2K as soon as Title 42 is undone. And it's ridiculous because what would happen then, it would go back to Title 8, which is the United States code that has all the provisions to do with immigration, visas, asylum. It has health and safety provisions. But they're just deathly afraid of the regular U.S. immigration law, which is Title 8, going into force, which is what would happen when this Title 42 preclusion comes to an end.
Which has historically been absolutely tyrannical. I mean, like, this isn't going to be some sort of free ride for people coming in. I mean, they've been snatching up people for years under Title 8, as you say, and that's what they're going to return to. In fact, now Biden's sending 1,500 troops down to the border to militarize things even further, it sounds like.
Yeah, and you probably remember I've talked about in the past how I prevented my governor from sending troops to the border because they needed to be sponsored by a law enforcement agency. So the other border counties accepted the troops, but I didn't want to militarize the border and make it a war zone here like nice. East Germany. Neither did my merchants or the community. We have a sister city in Mexico that has the same name. There's Nogales, United States, and Nogales, Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we have a very vibrant relationship, cultural relationship, and nobody wants the war zone imagery here, and the razor wire on the wall. And of course, I fought the governor from making a container wall here. We did a protest on the border, and I stood along with the protesters. We got that container wall removed. So it's a continuation of that hype, and it's really weird. Everybody wants to have their conference call on this subject. I've had Homeland Security and Border Patrol and the governor and our U.S. senator from Arizona trying to get everybody on a conference call to prepare for the world to come to an end when we go back to Title VIII, which is, like you said, Ian, the same thing we've always had there that's has its own draconian provisions. Mm-hmm. But just to stop this disingenuous thing that says COVID is a problem, so we need to keep these brown-skinned people from making claims on the southern border, but yet nobody's proposing that Title 42 be used on the Canadian border or that we build mm-hmm. walls on the Canadian border. So
of course not. As you know, it's not about COVID at all, and it's not really about immigration at all. It's about brown people.
Yeah, it's an excuse to be xenophobic that sound like you're concerned about health and safety.
Sadly.
So on this point, I've got the Fox News story pulled up here. It sounds like not only is Biden trying to position how tough he is on immigration by sending 1,500 troops to the border, according to this, they're also developing a new asylum rule. The Biden administration has proposed a new rule that will bar migrants from being able to claim asylum if they've crossed into the U.S. illegally, have not scheduled an appointment via the CPB1 app, and have not claimed asylum in a country through which they previously passed. So it sounds to me like
this is insane. If someone comes here for political asylum, the only thing that should be done is they should be granted it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no way the U.S. can require a third country to grant asylum to somebody before they reach here. So say they're coming from Honduras or Guatemala, mm-hmm. and they're claiming that they're a political, refugee, their family's in danger in that country. The U.S. is trying to claim, oh, no, you should have been granted asylum in an intermediate country before you got here, but we can't require Mexico to grant asylum to people. Right. It's kind of immaterial how they got here, what the mechanism was for them to get here. And then that provision you were talking about there, Ian, makes all these Operation Speedway, I don't know if you've ever heard of that or you could Google that. It's like when they do these mass hearings on anybody that's come in front of an immigration court, they'll get a room full of 100 people, read them all their rights, and say, you're now a convict and you will now be a felon if you ever come back again. Wow. If their initial crime was just illegal entry, crossing over to try to work, and mm-hmm. they're all coming over to work or to make an asylum claim. So it's an attempt to make everybody go through the ports of entry, but yet they're not intending to process all the people that come. They're still turning people away, and so it doesn't make any sense. And I guess that it's an attempt to try to make it where people won't. Because when you set foot in the U.S., then the way it has been, you're entitled to make an asylum claim. And I guess it's an attempt to circumvent that.
So just to clarify, the room full of people thing you're talking about, they're not giving them any kind of trial. They're just saying
like a kangaroo court, right?
Yeah, they're just saying we're convicting you.
Here's what happens. You may have heard this from the right, from the conservatives, that these are all the worst of the worst. They're convicted felons. Well, in order to get all these people to be convicted, what they do, they had this program called Operation Speedway, where they would have one assigned defense attorney to represent a whole room full of people. They would save them up for like a week, and mm-hmm. then they'd take them to Tucson and put them in U.S. District Court and get one attorney to advise them all of their rights en masse and get them all to raise their hand where they would be deported if they would all declare themselves guilty, accept the guilty plea, and then they have on record that now you are convicted from uh-huh. a previous immigration crime. So the next time you come, you're a convicted felon. And then everybody uses this as proof that we're getting the worst of the worst because they do these mass
quote unquote felons.
And I think you could probably, yeah, you could look up Operation Speedway and
wow.
see how they do that.
So it is a kangaroo court.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll let you go back into your country. We're not going to put you in prison. We won't keep you in prison here if you just take this plea deal and you just go back, and then you'll be a felon in the United States. That's how
it
is.
And the conviction will be illegal entry, which just means crossing at a point that's not a designated entry point. Like you just walked across at a point, and not that you did anything violent or you stole anything from anybody. But that's a non-crime.
That's a harmless choice.
And now they're saying this new rule that Biden, you know, who the conservatives want you to believe that Biden's like telling immigrants to come on in, when the reality is Biden's been continuing the Trump era immigration crackdowns. And now
it's so funny. Even all of our politicians here in Arizona, the Democrats, people want to make this a Democrat versus Republican thing. It's just so funny because even our state level and county level politicians that are Democrats, they've all been decrying like, oh, we can't let Title 42 come to an end. They just lick their finger, stick it up and see which way the wind's blowing. And they think like, well, maybe we need to consider that we might gain more conservative votes if we chime in and say that Title 42 can never come to an end. Like my board of supervisors, it's a three person board of supervisors for my county, a border county. They're all Democrats on the board, but yet they did a joint resolution saying that we oppose Title 42 ever coming to an end.
Wow. Well, of course they did. They're the government. It's just like the Patriot Act or whatever. They're never going to let it come to an end. It's more power to them.
And yet everybody says these rascally Democrats, wide open borders, they want them all to come in. It's a bunch of nonsense. Yeah, they're just as bad as the Republicans.
And now they're going to try to tell, if this rule goes into play, and I don't see why anyone would stop it, it's the administration that's going to come up with this rule, that says here that if they cross illegally, meaning not at the official checkpoints, and have not scheduled an appointment via the CPB1 app, as though migrants are just—they just know to download the app for the Customs and Border Patrol.
If you're a political prisoner from Belize or whatever, what are the chances that you have a smartphone capable of running this app in the first place?
You just spent days crossing through Mexico to try to make it to the U.S. border, and they're going to tell you can't be an asylum. You know, you can't claim asylum because you didn't have the right app.
And they won't. There's no place where you can go where they can review your papers and review your case. And then they have this very, very limited number that they'll process through that app. And the ones that are processed through that app, you're not going to believe this, but it's now gotten to the point where your court date is 8 years into the future because
Just let them come over.
They haven't been doing any processing, but they've been added to the virtual line, this queue, queue, these thousands of people, but they've been doing no hearings. So now they have a limited number.
I thought 2 years was bad.
But then they add you to this hearing list that's now years long. So they can say, like, yeah, we're processing people legally. We're not letting these rascally illegals come in anymore. But they're funneling them into this app that's just a never-ending thing. It has a limited number that they're going to process. And then they just give you a court date that's years down the road.
What happens to the person who is applying for asylum that's told, okay, 8 years? Do they get to just hang out in the United States for the 8 years?
Now they have this thing under Trump. It was called MMP, or unofficially the Remain in Mexico policy. And under Biden, they still do that, but they also have the option of what's called paroling you into the U.S., pending a hearing. So they've kind of been doing a mixture of both, but there's been so little processing because of Title 42 that's kind of remains to be seen. They say officially that we have both options. We have the option of quote-unquote paroling them into the U.S. pending an immigration hearing, or requiring them to stay in Mexico. The problem is, if they're from another country like Guatemala, Mexico doesn't have to accept them, doesn't have to allow them to stay in Mexico or give them a visa to be in Mexico. So we can't just say that Mexico has to accept them. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of...
What if they're trying to leave Mexico? What if that's where they're trying to get asylum from?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they just can't get a hearing. But what they need to do is actually deal with these cases immediately. If they're going to put it through some bureaucracy like this, you know, of course, You know, they need to have more hearing officers, more immigration judges right on the border. But, yeah, that's not going to happen. Of course, my solution is if it's a voluntary encounter, if you're voluntarily renting a house to somebody or employing somebody, you know, or selling them something, if it's a voluntary encounter, nobody's hurt and there's neither side is being hurt, why are they even blocking these voluntary encounters? It's all comes back to private property. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a, if I own a house here in the U.S. and I want to rent to a Mexican, that's a voluntary encounter, a voluntary arrangement between a landlord and a tenant.
That's all it ought
to be. Why did they get to interfere with that? That's all that should matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. If they're going to do this, I don't understand why they can't have a judge, like, there to make the decision. Like, the moment this person gets there, put them in front of a judge and let the judge make the decision then.
They don't care about people. They don't care about helping.
That used to be that way when I was a kid. I grew up here on the border. I was born here. They would have these, they were either called hearing officers or immigration law judges. There would be a line. They line up and show, here's my Mexican birth certificate. Here's my claim. I want to work or I want to be a student or I want to be a tourist. There's different categories of visas or I'm claiming asylum. Okay, what's your claim? Is it best based on a credible threat? And they would make the decision right then and give you a little temporary visa called an I-94. And they had to turn that back in within a certain number of days, like 90 days, or they'd never get another one again. And it was easy to hire somebody to work in the U.S. Like, we're a ranching family, and it was easy for my dad and my grandfather to hire people to work back in those days. But nowadays, even the border officers don't know what the procedures are. They don't know, do we still have work visas or student visas or tourist visas?
Wow.
What are the procedures for asylum? They don't even know the procedures are.
Wow. Well, that's depressing. Thank you for sharing the expertise from down there on the southern border. David Hathaway, thank you for the call tonight, man. I appreciate it.
And if you have a minute, I'll tell you another funny little anecdote.
Sure.
We have another sheriff in Arizona who's running for U.S. Senator from Arizona, but he doesn't have border with Mexico, so he's not a border sheriff.
Mm.
But his single issue is the Mexican border. That's all he talks about. So he snuck into my county last week without telling me, and my wife was at the airport and saw this sheriff's office helicopter come in and this guy get out, and it said his county, which is Pinal County, and then they're supposed to do a courtesy call if they come into another sheriff's county and they're doing something operational. But he came down and I called him and he said, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you. And then right on cue, he was on Fox News, national news, I'm down here on the border with the border backdrop in a county that's not his county, but he needed the border backdrop and talking about how he's going to get control of the border when he's in the U.S. Senate. It's just kind
what
of
a clown.
Funny little thing.
That's ridiculous. All right, man. Hey, thanks for the update. I definitely appreciate hearing from you, David. Thank you for the call tonight, man.
Talk to you later.
It's Sheriff David Hathaway from actually down there on the border in Santa Cruz County, Arizona, like the only real libertarian sheriff that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Kudos to him for that. He's staying true to his principles.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's a real pleasure to know that he's out there and to actually get the inside scoop on what's really going on. You will not get the straight scoop from the mainstream media. You sure as hell won't get it from the mainstream political parties. Even though he did get elected as a Democrat, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
There's more coming up here. The number is 603-283-6160. Join us here. Hour number three is coming up.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there are some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about the alarming increase in man-made disasters, financial institutions collapsing, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare. And the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on over a dozen emergency food kits. These include tasty breakfasts, lunches, dinners, drinks, fruits, veggies, meats, and snacks, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. My Patriot Supply food kits are in stock and shipped discreetly. We've seen too many Americans let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. TeamGaday.com. TeamGaday.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.